Happy Marriage Conference. Thank you all for being here. I don't want to take too much time here at the beginning. I'm going to introduce John so we can get him going. He's the reason that we're here. John is a native of Jackson, Mississippi. He is an Ole Miss grad.
I got it!
I warned Walt of that beforehand so he could get it out of the system. He's an Ole Miss grad. He is a graduate of Reform Seminary in Jackson. He also has a doctorate from a school in Los Angeles. John is a clinical psychologist. He's been doing that for 28 years, is that right? 28 years. He actually saw three clients this morning before flying here, so very active in his practice there. John speaks on marriage and parenting at churches throughout our denomination. So literally this week, on Wednesday, I got an email on this former RUF listserv about a conference that he's doing in March for other pastors and their wives in our denomination. So he's a great speaker in both of those realms, and so we were really, really excited to have him here. His wife's name is Norma. They have three daughters. Here's what is incredible, too. One of John's three daughters is a horned frog. And so, yeah, it's close, right? So in our conversation, we were setting this up. One of the things that he was most excited about was to be back in Fort Worth so that he could go to Joe T's. Weekend, too. There is a handout for you. And there is a Google number up top there. So John's given us that number. So if you have questions during his talks, I think there'll be some interactive time. Mm-hmm. But you can text questions to him as they come to you. So that might be helpful if you don't want to forget your question, or maybe if it's a question that you'd rather remain anonymous in asking. That's there for you as well. I think that's it. We'll have some announcements about tomorrow morning at the very end. But with that, we'll welcome John up here.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I do conferences all over the place, but it is really fun to be invited to come and speak to a place I really wanted to come to. We loved Fort Worth. And yeah, I mean, I was like, yeah, conference, whatever. Can we go to Joe T's? You know, that's literally where I was. We just really enjoyed our years here and, you know, games at Ammon Carter Field. And I remember there was a bumper sticker. I don't know if you guys still have it. It said something like, come to Fort Worth if you want to see Texas. Go to Dallas if you want to see Atlanta. And I thought, I want one of those. That kind of captures the Fort Worth vibe for me. But so welcome to our marriage conference, which I call Finders. Keepers. I'm not on the speaker yet. Anyway, I call it Finders Keepers. I used to call it John's 10 Easy Steps to Hot Racy Romance, but I thought I needed to get a little more serious, you know, take it, you know. But anyway, I call it Finders Keepers because I want singles and marrieds here. I want to speak to you marrieds about how to, you know, keep your relationship, how to grow there, what you need to make your relationship thrive. And you singles, I want you here because, you know, face it, I wish I had known all this stuff before I got married, right? So the software, the operating system of a romantic relationship, whether you're married or not married, runs on the same principles. So I want you here because I want you learning the stuff that you can use later on. Norm and I have been married 35 years. We have three girls, all of whom are grown, all of whom have jobs. That's going on my resume. Two are married, I have a grandson. So I'd actually like to use the first 30 minutes of our presentation to show you a few pictures of my grandson. Anyway, my oldest, Callie, who went to TCU, is now a therapist in Nashville, which is funny, interesting, story in itself. I mean, she says things like, you know, God, Dad, that was kind of passive aggressive. And I'm like, you're using my stuff on me. You can't use my stuff, you know. Anyway, and I'm a clinical psychologist, and I do sort of what you would think I would do. I have a couch and a pipe and a sweater and, you know, I do therapy. Okay? And speak. That's kind of what I do. And I see kind of a broad range, you know, depression, anxiety, OCD, out of control behaviors, and marriages. I see a lot of marriages. And that's actually how I got started speaking on marriage. Contrary to what I'm sure you believe, my speaking on marriage did not begin by my wife saying, "Oh, honey, you make marriage so wonderful. You've got to share your secrets. You know, other wives are missing out." You know, that's not how it happened. She's actually given up believing that I'll actually do any of this stuff, you know, for real. So my professional credentials will have to suffice regarding my expertise here. I'm as big a knuckleheaded husband as any of you guys are, as you will hear as we go along. It just won't sound that way because speakers always sound like they're really good at what they're speaking on, you know. Actually, a woman came up to my wife after one of my conferences and said to her, she said, "What must it be like to be married to him?" And my wife tactfully said, "You have no idea." So, we're all actually very fallen. And that's kind of where we're going to start this morning. Point one is we're all fallen knuckleheads, all right? And that's a technical term. But it wasn't always that way. That's where we're going to start. Marriage conferences weren't always necessary. A zillion years ago, I would have been out of work. Because in the beginning, God created marriage in a way that was wonderful. Before the fall, Adam and Eve had a wonderful marriage. Now, how do we know that? Because the Bible tells us they had a wonderful marriage. And it does so in a simple phrase. And it's all you need to know. And it's what we all still hope for. How does the Bible describe Adam and Eve's marriage, their relationship? It says, oh, there's my intro slide. They were naked and not ashamed. All right. Now, that's not describing the first nudist colony. All right. That is saying that Adam and Eve, in their relationships, try this on, were able to be themselves and it was loved. To be really who I am and you like me better. In other words, there's no hiding, there's no posturing, there's no criticism. I'm just myself and you love it. Try that on. Isn't that what you want? Singles, isn't that what you're looking for? We'll pass a sign-up sheet around, okay? And all of us would sign because all of us were created for this. We still long for it. And Adam and Eve had it, all right? And I'm leaning on that point because a lot of what goes on in our marriages that creates problems is the fact that our hearts are still wired, hardwired for that kind of connection and we don't get it and it drives us crazy, all right? Now, when they have it, when we have it, when it feels good, the thing we seek, I'm going to call the ideal, all right? And that's where love feels good. You know, and relationships always kind of start there. You know me and I know you and we're excited and, you know, want to write a song. In fact, that's what Adam does when he first meets his wife. If you go back and look at the passage, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, you know how Adam responds when he sees Eve? It's a song. He sings a song to her. I kind of imagine sort of a Sinatra thing, kind of bone of my bone, the dame is. Kind of like that. Sorry. Anyway, the ideal. And we all get kind of a version of that with new love. When we first meet one another and when we fall in love and when we get married, we are living in that joyful ideal, that wonderful in love kind of feeling, you know, where you leave notes on each other's cars and finish each other's sandwiches, you know. That's what I was going to say. And that's actually okay. I think the ideal, that new love, giddy, joyful thing is okay. A lot of us old, married, cynical types, you know, we sort of roll our eyes and we're like, yeah, dreamy first stage of love, just you wait, you know, and we're kind of like that. But I don't want to knock it completely. I think we were created for that kind of oneness. And I think that joy of love, when it really works, is a taste of what heaven's going to be like. Okay, so I don't want to totally knock it. But I do want to talk about what to do when you lose it. Because we will. It's not too long before reality comes knocking at the door of that ideal and that joyful new stage of love. And we have stage two, which I call the ordeal or the raw deal. And now planet Earth is full of things that make your marriage stink and make relationships hurt. And you misunderstand me or you attack me or you disappoint me. Norma sometimes says, just the way he breathes annoys me sometimes, you know. So now I'm falling and she's falling and then, you know, we have kids, you know. And so it's like downhill all the way. And the truth is that ultimately what Prince Charming is saying to Cinderella is, you can put on your own glass slippers, girl. Me and Rapunzel's husband are going to watch wrestling, you know. And that's sort of the real truth in the fairy tales. When we were first married, we lived in this creaky little duplex in the Belhaven neighborhood in Jackson. That's a lot of old 1920s sort of homes that are restored. And we were newly married just a few weeks back from our honeymoon, and we were both getting ready upstairs. And all of a sudden, we hear this kind of bang downstairs, and we both look at each other, and we're like, what was that? I don't know. This could be the boogeyman. And she goes, well, go check. And I'm like, I'm not going to go check. It could be the boogeyman. And she said, well, my daddy would have gone and checked. I'm like, let's call your daddy. You know, she turns to her Conan, you know, to protect her. And it's like, you know, welcome to marriage, sweetheart. All right. So this arrival of the yuck that we all experience is a crisis. And here's why. Number one, we hit the ordeal, which, you know, hurts. Problem one, you hurt me, you're critical of me, you work too much, whatever like that. And that's problem number one. But problem number two, and this is key, is that most marriages and most humans have no idea how to address the ordeal, how to deal with that disappointment, how to deal with that loss and that hurt when it hits. We don't know what to do. In fact, what do we tend to do when we start to run into the yuck in our marriages? When we start to run into junk that feels bad, what most people tend to do is start demanding the ideal back. In other words, I want to make this back the way I wanted it to be. I want to get you back where it was and inner conflict and fighting. Okay? In other words, so all of a sudden, it's not just that life gets nasty. Now I'm going to get nasty. All right? Or the other side of that is we can try harder to become what you want. Well, there's always two sides. We'll get more to that later. But since the fall, the most human response when we encounter the yuck in our relationships, or when we're hurting, or when we're scared, or when we're needful, is we want the bad to become good again. And we start blaming, we start criticizing. Think about what you're saying when you say, why aren't you more so-and-so? Or I can't believe you said so-and-so. We're saying, this hurts, I want it good again. This hurts, I want you to be good to me again. I want the ideal back again. That blame approach, which is where we usually go once we hit the ordeal, as you know, was begun by our dear mother and father, Adam and Eve. I mean, think about it. What did they do when they sinned? They sin and they start hiding, and then what do? God comes to Adam and he says, who told you you were naked? What does Adam do? He does what any self-respecting husband would do. He blames his wife, all right? In fact, if you think about it, he blames God and Eve in the same sentence. The woman who you gave to me, which I think is pretty good for your first day as a sinner. You know, it's like hitting a double as a rookie in the big leagues. You know, I think he's really taken to this. It's good stuff, you know. Now, in case you didn't notice, we encounter the ideal, we hit the ordeal, we tend to deal with the ordeal with blame and criticism and why aren't you whatever. In case you haven't noticed, that blame thing doesn't get you very far. All right? I'm expecting you've probably tried it in your marriage, all right? And it doesn't fix the ordeal, and it doesn't get you very much fulfillment in your marriage, and rarely does your spouse ever go, wow, yeah, you're right, I am the bad guy. You know, that just doesn't happen that often. Nevertheless, most of our marriages become what I call marriages of blame. We encounter the ordeal and we start to fight. Let's stop for a second there, though. I want to give us the benefit of the doubt. Think about what we're doing when we do that. When you encounter the pain in your relationship and you start criticizing one another or blaming one another, I can't believe that you didn't, whatever, why did you so-and-so? What are we doing? What are we saying when we say that? Remember, a ton of the conflict and the desire to control or to criticize in our marriages is to try to get the ideal back. In other words, we are both wanting naked and not ashamed again. We are wanting the good, the bad to feel good again. We want the hurt to stop. I want you to get this. To a large degree, your spouse or your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, is not just being jerks here. They are longing and they don't know what to do with it. They want this to feel good again. I want you to know this about each other. This is something you have deeply in common. You're both wanting it to feel good and for the hurt to stop. All right? You know, I have these couples and they're like, you know, been in hurtful relationship for years and like, we have nothing in common. And I'm like, well, you actually do have in common the fact that you're both hurting and you both want it to stop. All right? In that sense, you're same and samesies, okay? You're besties, all right? So anyway, we hit the ordeal. We start, you know, fighting to get the ideal back, which makes the ordeal even worse. What should we do? Where should we go? What's the third stage? Where should we end up with this? Well, the only hope I believe, and I think this is the gospel applied to marriage, is for us to begin with what I call a growth marriage. And we're going to have two parts to that, kind of like the gospel. Number one, first thing we're going to say is, hey, we are both a mess. We are both fallen. And we're going to stop the criticism. We're going to stop the blaming. We're going to stop playing who's the bad guy hot potato. We're both fallen, and we're going to make that safe. Cox is telling us we both are bringing junk to the table here. So first thing we're going to do is say, let's stop the condemnation. All right? That's where God starts. That's where we're going to start. And secondly, now let's start solving these problems and start growing in our ability to relate well. And that's where I want to take you this weekend. All right? In other words, this is going to be a little bit different from other marriage conferences maybe you've been to. I'm going to skip over the things you can get in like a marriage book, you know, getaway weekends and five meaningful touches and men are like microwaves and women are like crock pots, you know, that kind of stuff, and try to go a little bit deeper. Tomorrow we're going to unpack in detail, in as much detail as we can, the issues of intimacy and what closeness looks like, what being able to be close and what being able to trust closeness look like. And we're going to really try to deconstruct fighting and conflict in detail tomorrow. But tonight I want to go big picture. I want to talk to you about what a growth marriage looks like, how we can stop the condemnation and get on the same team and grow together. All right? So we have the ideal, we lose it and get the ordeal. Where do we go? Where we go is saying, look, we're not enemies here. We both need to grow. Now let's listen to what Cox has to say and learn how we can start doing that. All right? I want to put you on the same team. So let's get started with that. And to do that, we got to get psychological for a minute. All right? You got to grant me that. Basic psychological principle. In order to make life work, in order to have friends, in order to be married, in order to have a job, heck, in order to buy a car, God made us to where we need certain abilities in our hearts and in our character. Okay? Character is going to be a big word for us here. All right? In other words, we need skills. In order to do marriage, our character is going to have some skills, like Napoleon Dynamite. Hey, Pedro, you've got skills. Same kind of thing, all right? In other words, we need what I'm going to call character abilities to understand love, to understand what it looks like to be strong and have a sense of me, to manage my emotional world, to deal with failure. And that is software, character software, in a sense, that we have to learn. I mean, we ain't born with it, okay? Let me talk about character for a second. For a psychologist, character is a technical term. I don't mean like integrity, like he's a man of character. Nor do I mean like, hey, he's a real character. For a psychologist, character is a technical term that refers to the collection of abilities that you need in your heart, kind of in the image of God, to make life work. And they also, as you will see, will so mirror what God calls us to. Character is a shorthand term to reflect the collection of abilities you need to do life. All right? And here's the secret. People get symptoms or they have marriage problems because life is requiring something of them, or the relationship is requiring something of them, or their spouse is asking for something from them that they can't do, because they don't have the ability. But we can learn it. Give you an example. Somebody gets married. Do they have the ability in their character? Did they learn to be emotionally close? Or is it, you know, after the honeymoon, it's me and my best friend, the remote control, right? Or they keep doing destructive behaviors that they can't say no to. In other words, they can't manage their impulses well. They can't set limits on themselves. That's a heart ability that you have to learn in relationships. What if they didn't have it? Can they manage difficult people in their lives? Can they apprehend what it feels like to be forgiven? Can they fail and it not be humiliating? Those are abilities that we have to learn. And what I've found for doing therapy for 35 years is that when people are struggling in their lives or in their relationship or their symptoms, be it depression or anxiety or OCD or marriage problems, pick a card. It's not because they're lazy or stupid or need advice. And it's rarely because they have a disease or a chemical imbalance. They struggle. We struggle because life is requiring something of us characterologically, and nobody taught us. We were wounded there. They didn't have ever developed those abilities. All right? That's what good therapy is, by the way. It's not giving people wise counsel. It's helping them develop the character abilities that they're missing. You don't fix depression. You fix the character issue underneath. We can talk about that if y'all want. Now, we learn these character abilities in relationships, all right? And childhood is, of course, where we begin that process, which is why shrinks are always saying, tell me about your mama, all right? That's not because we want to blame your mom and daddy for everything, but your childhood relationship is the first formative relationship you have, and we're interested in what you learned and what you didn't learn in your little software package of your character, okay? Now, adulthood is about completing them. Because none of us come to the table with a full set, all right? More on that later. But what's supposed to happen is we're supposed to be in relationships, and we're supposed to develop these abilities to love and be strong in who I am and understand forgiveness and be able to give forgiveness and manage my emotional world. And then we come to the table of our adult lives with a full toolbox of all these abilities characterologically to be able to love well and to fail well. And that's just great, right? Everybody double rainbow on that? No, it's not great, because sin messed this whole process up. And now, I mean, we come to adulthood now, and you know, we're fallen and broken. Nobody's completed jack, all right? Your parents were fallen, and their parents were fallen. You know the old joke, if you think mom was crazy, should have met grandma, you know? So, secret of the universe, starting off tonight, is we all hit adulthood missing some of the character abilities that God created us to have in order to do relationships well, and that's going to leave a mark. So now, you come to your romantic relationship, and you've been told that this is the place where you're supposed to at last receive all of this fulfillment and joy, and we start running into stuff that you can't do so well. And that your spouse can't do so well, or that your boyfriend doesn't do so well. Because romantic relationships, be they dating or marriage, require a lot of these character abilities. And before you know it, you're going to have marriage problems, or work problems, or spiritual problems, whatever. And you'll be thinking, ah, I know I should have married that bass player. See, this isn't working out, right? But the problem is not your marriage. The problem is both of you lacking some of the abilities in your character that we all need to make marriage work. You bring two incomplete people to the table, and you're going to have a relationship that struggles. And everybody points the fingers and goes, we have a bad marriage. Or like a couple the other day that told me, we want to get a divorce. We want to quit trying. And I said, well, actually, let me put it this way. The problem is not with your car. The problem is that you guys are both bad drivers, okay? In other words, you don't need to trade in the car and get a new one. You need driver's ed, all right? So the problem, this is kind of my approach to a marriage conference and to marriage therapy. The problem is not your marriage. The problem is both of you lacking character abilities that we have to make life work and to make relationship work. And you both bring those deficits and voila, it's going to be messy. Now, I want you to leave here this weekend with a real understanding of what those abilities are, where your own blind spots might be, where your spouses are. So now we can start working on the correct problem. Here's the correct question. How do we start growing in our hearts together? How do we start growing together to do married stuff better? What do we need in our software? What are those abilities? I'm going to talk through them tonight. We're going to unpack two categories of them in more detail tomorrow. And as I go through these, I want you both thinking, huh, I wonder if that could be one of my blind spots. Huh, I wonder if that could be one of my spouse's blind spots. And I want you to think it in that order. Okay? And you singles, I want you thinking, can my girlfriend do these things? Or I want you thinking, how can I be growing in these things? In other words, I have a talk I do to singles sometimes called becoming the kind of person you're hoping to find. Okay? In other words, if you're looking for a great relationship, start becoming that person. I want you to be looking at what we're talking about tonight through those kind of eyes, not like, oh, we're all the good guys. Okay? I want you to be thinking character-wise. And I want you to begin looking at your marriage not as a place where, you know, your spouse is just a jerk, that marriage of condemnation or that marriage of judgment we were talking about, but as a place where you're both incomplete in the image of God. Fellow fallen people, not enemies, okay? Part one, here we go with the gospel again. Let's get rid of the condemnation. Nobody's the bad guy. Let's have the grace here to say we're both broken. And step two for God is great. Now that it's safe to be fallen, let's get to work growing. How can we begin growing together in our body of Christ relationships and our growing places to be more filled with those abilities? You see how that parallels the gospel? Let's get rid of the problem of guilt and who's the bad guy. Now let's get to being more like Christ, all right? It's a good enough plan for God. It's a good enough plan for your marriage. So what do we need character-wise to make marriage work? I call them the four I's. You know how they say there's no I in team? Well, there is in marriage, all right? There's four of them. Dang it. All right. Number one. Intimacy. This is about closeness and attachment and belonging and being connected. And we're going to need to go two ways with this one. As you will see, we will go two ways with all of these. All right? We're going to call them, can I let you in and can I keep you in? What do we mean by these? Let's look at let you in first. Can I let you in? Think about the kind of things we usually talk about, you know, in our lives. We chit-chat. We do news, sports, and weather. Like, can't believe Trump's latest tweet. Or how about them horned frogs? You know, or as we say in the South, how's your mama and them? Okay, and we sort of chit-chat, right? Or we sort of solve a problem or give an opinion, like, have you paid the bills yet? Or, I like Blacklist. Or, should we remodel or move? And you kind of work practically in life. And those are incredibly valid, and they're pretty necessary to make life happen. And we'll talk about this more in detail tomorrow, all right? So they're valid. You know, and solving problems is valid, all right? This isn't all about just being lovey-lovey. We're not building a commune here. So the validity of the practical life, we're going to talk about some tomorrow. But if this is all you do, if all you can do is sort of do the chit-chat thing, solve problems, give opinions, if this is the deepest you can go, you'll never get a real sense of who I am. Okay? I won't be able to be close to you. In other words, can I let you in means, did I learn the ability? Was I shown? Was I taught what it feels like to be me? Do I understand that? Some people don't know. Can I communicate what it feels like to be me to you? Can I care what it feels like to be you? All right? That's all intimacy is. Right? It's not really that complicated. But for marriage to be meaningful, we have to be able to kind of go below the surface and share our hearts. And usually that does mean something in the feeling realm. All right? Sorry, guys. All right? Like I'm hurting, or I'm scared about that meeting this week, or I can see you're really exhausted from the kids, or I'm proud of you about what you did at work. But do you hear the feeling communicated there? The feeling? Do you hear the heart communicated there? I am proud of you, what you did at work. You feel the heart there? Okay? God calls this abiding with Him. He's really into this. He, in fact, expresses its absence by saying things like, these people honor me with lip service, but their hearts are far from me. All right? You ever hear that from your loved one? Somebody has. So I'm talking to this guy this week, in fact, and he has a porn addiction, actually, but he's only up in his head. Like, when he talks to me, he's only up in his head. There's no heart connection. There's no emotional connection. And I can tell he's in a lot of pain, but if you ask him, you know, how are you? Like, you look like you're hurting. What you just described at work sounds so hard. What was it like? He's all like, well, you know, it's work's pretty challenging, and you know, it requires a lot, and there's no connection to his gut. Okay? No wonder he goes and escapes into something else, all right? And I'm like, who knows that you're struggling? And he's like, nobody. In other words, he's not connected. He doesn't let anybody in. And touching the emotional world in him or letting somebody into that is something that he can't do. All right? He doesn't have the ability yet. I'm going to teach it to him. All right? And when I do, he's going to give up the porn automatically. That'll be easy. But we got to cure the heart first. All right? So if you want to grow or you want your dating to progress, one of the questions I want you to ask is, how good am I at that whole, like, sharing my heart, emotional connection, saying something about what I feel, caring about how you feel? Could this be one of my blind spots? All right? If not, your marriage may have that kind of roommate feel. And you might say, there's something wrong with our marriage. But actually, the problem might be that you both have some kind of an issue with this whole connection thing. So can I let you in? That's an ability we have to be taught in relationships. And we're going to talk more about what that looks like in the relationships when you learn it. Because a lot of us didn't learn this. Now, it's not too late. We can still learn it. All right? Now, at this point, all the connecting relational types are going like, right on, man. Preach it, brother. This is why I brought him. You know, and they're like elbowing him, making sure he's paying attention. You know? But intimacy means for us relator types, and me and Norma are backwards. Okay? I'm more the, I'm Venus, she's Mars. I'm more the emotional one, and she's more the, I'm always like, you know, quit trying to fix my problems and just hear my feelings, you know. You know, turn off the football game and let's just talk. That's me. And she says, you know, I'd make some guy a great wife. There's some guy out there who's watching Tom Brady who wishes I was with him. Anyway, for us relator types, we can be going, yeah, they need to learn that kind of let you in thing. And that's kind of stereotypical marriage conference, right? We got that out of the way. You'll need to learn to share your hearts more. All right. Yeah, but for us relator types, we need to be asking, have I developed the ability to feel loved and connected inside? Okay? In other words, can I keep you in? Okay? And this is about, do I live my life needing you to connect with me all the time and affirm me all the time and encourage me all the time and be shared with all the time? Or sometimes can I just feel good being me and feel good being strong and know that you love me? All right? So yes, part of love is sharing. Can I let you in? But the other side of it, and we often miss this, is that for a lot of us sharing types, who are constantly needing to be understood and close and reassured, and if we're not talking a lot, we're not okay, we drive our other spouse crazy. Okay? So you singles, you know, this is kind of where you text them and you kind of waiting if they're going to text you back. Are they going to text you back? They're going to text you back. You know, can you hold on to love, you know? As one of my teenage clients says, if you don't hear from them after 15 minutes, it's over, you know? So second question is, have I developed the ability inside to feel loved and grounded in myself, even if you are watching the football game, and know that I matter to you? In other words, can I be as fueled by my own sense of self and my own strength and by trust as I am fueled by connection with you? Otherwise, we come across as needy and demanding, and our can't let you in spouses start rolling their eyes. And we're going to talk tomorrow about how that starts to create really interesting dances about intimacy, okay? We're going to unpack this a lot tomorrow, first talk, because it is so important and because people screw it up so easily. All right, so these are character abilities you have to be taught. If you don't have these, it's because you weren't taught them in a relationship, and you can learn them, all right? Can I reach out and share? Can I trust and not be needy? All right. By the way, what happens when I can't let you in and I can't keep you in, go out on a blind date? It's love at first sight. You know, all you want is somebody to connect to you, and I have no ability to connect. We're perfect for each other. I don't know why it is. It always happens, though, okay? Here's another, by the way. These are on a continuum. Practically speaking, I mean, nobody's one end or the other. I just want to give you some meaningful categories, all right? Though you will tend toward one end or the other. Now, if you struggle here, if you hear this and go, oh, that one's me, we're cool in the gang. It's okay, all right? You're fallen. Welcome to the club. Now, admit that to your spouse or your girlfriend and go, yeah, that's kind of what you've been talking about, right? Right. Okay, now, let's quit fighting and start growing there, all right? That's my bottom line point. Not as enemies, but as friends who need to grow. All right, second I, identity. This is the issue of separateness. This is the issue of boundaries. In other words, even though we're one with someone, there's still two people involved, okay? There's more to a relationship than just attachment. There's more to relationships than, you know, candlelight and bath soaps and Adele music, okay? There's also the issue of, you know, personal individuality, okay? Identity, all right? So, two sides again. As my old therapist used to say, it's a mighty thin dime that don't have two sides. All right, so we got two sides again. I consider y'all Southerners. Do you consider yourself Southerners?
No.
Texans? What's the deal with that? You're like Texans. That's like a separate group, huh? Okay, all right. But y'all say y'all. And y'all get it when I go mighty thin dime, like y'all talk like that some, right? Yeah. I was up north 2 weeks ago and they're like, who is this redneck? It's good stuff, but he talks funny. All right, two parts. Can I be me and can I let you be you? All right. In other words, can we both matter? All right. Two poles of marriage you're going to hear me come back to a lot, and that is the two most important things in a marriage are intimacy and mutuality, all right? Mutuality is we both matter. We're both two separate whole people, and both of us matter, and we're really close. Now, you dance in that, and you have a good marriage. So these are pretty fundamentals. We both matter. Number one, can I be me? This is the ability to know who I am. This is the ability to know what I value. This is the ability to know what I want. Can I have my ideas and you have yours? Can I say no to you? All right? Can I be close to you but different from you? All right? Now, you know those people, and probably about half of you are those people, who are unable to be me if someone else isn't going to like it. You know, that whole thing? And they're on every Sunday school committee because they can't say no to you, right? All right, and they usually have trouble picking a restaurant, and they're like, you know, anywhere's fine, you know, and you want to go pick a restaurant, you know, and they live kind of controlled by what they think other people think. They become kind of chameleons, and of course they end up feeling kind of one down from their, they actually live in a compliant child position in their life, like trying to, you know, not upset anybody. All right, you know who you are. Now, I say to you, in order to make marriage work, one of the subroutines you need to have working in your character is we need the ability in our lives to have a seat at the table. We need the ability in our lives, we need to be taught in relationships that it's okay for me to be me, that I can have a voice. Okay? I see people all the time, and they have a lot to say about their demandy, control-y spouse. And they talk about what a jerk this person is. And this jerky spouse is always telling them how to drive, and telling them how they ought to spend their money, and telling them that, you know, they're not loving them well enough. Okay? And that's bad and all. But I always ask, you know, what if, instead of complying with them all the time like you do, or, you know, being afraid of upsetting them like you are, or doing their bidding and then resenting them later like you do, what if you said to them, you know what, look, I'll discuss this. What you want matters, right? But I'm not okay with you like telling me what's going to happen or ranting if I don't, because yes, what you want matters and what I want matters too, and we're going to have to make both of those things work. In other words, I know this is a brain teaser, but in a sense I say to them, what if there were two people in your marriage? Okay? You might end up with the best marriage in Tarrant County, right? Tarrant County, yeah. You might end up with the best marriage in Tarrant County if you had you in the relationship. I will often tell people who want to, like, they wake up and they've been controlled by the spouse always, and what they always want to do then is have a divorce. And I'm like, you know, instead of dropping the, like, atomic bomb boundary against your spouse, let's learn to drop lots of little boundaries. And we don't know, once you're in the marriage, it might be a good marriage. You haven't been in it. All right, so I tell them that, and they say, well, then she'd get really mad. And they're living their whole life based on what this other person is going to do. Can you be you in a relationship? That is an ability we have to learn. In other words, we need a sense of self, all right? This is not selfishness, by the way. Selfishness is only I matter, okay? Biblically speaking, this is stewardship, all right? This is knowing who I am, making choices based on that, being steadfast in those choices because it's what I value. Here I stand, I can do no other, Martin Luther. Letting that be a factor in the game. Okay, God calls this having a ye. All right, you know, when Joshua's leading the people in the promised land and he goes, you know, choose ye this day whom ye will serve. Okay, as for me and my house, we'll serve Yahweh, but ye's got to pick what ye wants, all right? Who are ye going to serve? You got to have a ye, all right? Just choose anybody, all right? So that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about being all self-centered and self-focused. It's having somebody who makes these choices, okay? Another version of not being able to be me, besides being a doormat, I just have to mention, is passivity. Passivity is the nice person sin. Okay? In other words, passivity is basically when I don't initiate in my life. I don't proactively act in my life. Okay? So my spouse is always having to initiate everything. In other words, the spouse is always having to remind me to pick up my clothes, or always having to initiate sex, or always having to come back and pick back up on that fight we never finished and resolved, and remind me we need to address this. And they're having to initiate everything, and if they don't do it, it won't get done. Okay? Now, passivity, if you're a passive person, this will drive your spouse crazy. Let me explain why. Because passivity puts your spouse in a double bind. So, let's say you don't do something, all right, because you're passive. Now, if your spouse doesn't do anything, what's going to happen? Nothing, all right? If your spouse does do something, what's going to happen? It's going to get done, but because they initiate it, which reinforces your passivity. So they're trapped. All right. This is why spouses who are married to passive people are pulling their hair out. All right. So if you're passive, take a look at that. All right. Which would require some initiative from you, which is exactly what you can't do, which is why passivity is so hard to fix. Okay. All right. Now, who do the doormats usually marry? Mr. or Miss Too Much Me. Okay? This is me. You don't like it? Tough. There's the door. You know, there's no question here of like, who is me? You know, me fills the room, right? So the next question is, did I learn to let you be you? To have room for you to exist, okay? This isn't all about me. The I can't be me people have trouble saying no. The can I let you be people need to learn to hear no, okay, and bend the knee. These are people who never kind of learn to make room for another person. And our sin nature actually makes this one tougher. Think about it, you know? I mean, we're all born and hold a board meeting and elect ourselves chairman. That's what sin's about, right? So we're kind of swimming against the sin nature current on this one of sort of somebody besides me matters, okay? But it's vital. I got a couple I saw a while back, and he literally never had anyone say no to him growing up. He was like in this rich family, and he was the little prince. And so, naturally, his wife is the one who came to therapy because, you know, living with him was making her crazy. So she comes to therapy and actually starts developing a can I be me, because she doesn't exist in this relationship, and that's like, you know, ripping her apart at the seams. So actually, she starts to grow some, and she starts to push back on the little prince. Well, then he wants to come to therapy. He's like, oh, I'm going back, you know, what are you learning over there? You know, so sure enough, he comes, and she says no to him or pushes back on him, and he's literally confused by it. You know, what do you mean you disagree? What, you mean no? You know, it's like, he's insulted. How dare you? And he's, of course, charmed with me for teaching her. But be reflecting. I'm one of these people. I told you I was one of the, I'm a keep you in, like, I'm great at letting you in, but trusting it and holding it, that's where I have to grow. And I have trouble letting you be you, because I want to run everything. We need to be reflecting on how good are we at the ability to make room for them to matter too. For them to disagree with us. For them to have a messy car when ours is, you know, showroom shiny. My wife has gotten really good at pushing back on me on this. I got in her car not long ago and I said, your car is a garbage scow. God, this is just a wreck. Your car's just a total mess. You need to get your car fixed. It's cleaned up. Take it somewhere. And she looked at me and she said, the operative word there being your. Good girl. Don't let me get away with that junk. In other words, can we manage somebody else pushing back on us, all right? Somebody saying, how you just spoke to me felt bad. Can we hear that? Can we make room for other people? And us respect that and be cool about that, okay? This is the spiritual ability of submission, all right? This is bending the knee to someone else mattering besides just me, okay? Now, listen to me, you doormats. People who live like this controlling person, us controllers, we need you to set limits on us. I need Norma to talk to me like she did about the car. Okay? You need to not let us control you. Okay? If we begin a sentence by saying something like, why did you invite them to the party? All right? I tell you what you're going to do, because you go into that victim one down position. You're going to be going, well, I thought that y'all were friends and I thought you would. Okay, don't do that. What I want you to say, if I say, why'd you invite them to the party? I want you to say, wow, I'm not sure if that's a question or a criticism. And I'm not really sure I want to do the criticism thing right now, but do you have a question you'd like to ask me? Because I'm not going to dance monkey dance when you walk in with your hands on your hips, okay? That's a good, powerful, loving limit on somebody who's jerky and controlly. And we might get mad at you when you do that, but you need to not comply with us if the marriage is going to thrive. That's what this relationship needs at that point, not more love. Okay? We're going to talk about this some tomorrow when we talk about conflict. But it's the only way to have a good marriage with an alpha. If you're married to somebody who can't let you be you, then it's time to lovingly start setting limits on that and calling them out about that. It's the only way they grow. It's also why the stereotypical Christian response of the wife who lives with like the bully husband, and we say, you know, just go back and submit better, doesn't work. Okay? Growth for a controller, love for them, usually means some kind of good hard limits. I love you, but you can't rant at me. Okay? I do this all the time, constantly in my practice, and it's so neglected and unexplored, actually, in the Christian community. How to lovingly set limits on the unruly, you know, 1 Thessalonians 5. Anyway, to do that, you have to have a you. And tomorrow we're going to talk about the conflict that having a you will inevitably create. But conflict's not necessarily bad. You doormats heard it here first. All right? Now, if you can't do that, start admitting it. Let's start growing together. Oh, he got me on that one. All right? In other words, we're not talking about your marriage here right now. We're talking about your character and how you grow. All right? And the pieces wherein you need to grow. That's what I want you to live with. I'm deconstructing your marriage because I want you to look and understand and know the actual places where your weak points are so you can talk about it. And so you can bring it to your small groups and your safe people or your therapist or your pastor and grow there and then bring that completeness back to your marriage. That's how this works. All right? By the way, If you are married to somebody who, I'm just going to call them unrepentant. I mean, all of us are unrepentant about something. But if you're married to somebody who's like, don't give me all that psychobabble stuff. I don't care about, you know, marriage therapy or whatever. You know, I'll yell at you if I want. Don't despair. Okay? If you are committed to growing, if you are married to somebody who doesn't care and they don't want to work on the relationship or whatever, they're just fine the way it is. If you continue growing, you will affect the marriage indirectly. I do this all the time. I joke with my colleagues that some of the best marriage therapy I do is individual therapy with one of the spouses. Now, let me tell you why that works. Because a marriage is like a baby mobile, okay? You know, a baby mobile works. And it's got like, you know, the strings and like little Noah's Arks or something hanging down, you know? Now, what happens to the baby mobile if you cut off one of the Noah's Arks? The whole baby mobile shifts. All right? Because it's a system. One part affects the other part. And what I see over and over and over and over again is one spouse comes to therapy and says, my spouse doesn't care, or they're a jerk, or they're doing these hurtful things. And I'm like, well, your question needs to be, help me become as Christ-like as I can be. Teach me these qualities that Christ calls us to. Help me to learn to relate righteously regardless to this person. And what I see 99% of the time is their spouse will change and not even know it. Sometimes their spouse will start coming to therapy. Sometimes their spouse will get depressed because they can't do their junk on their poor, pitiful victim spouse anymore. And so now they got to hold it inside and they start to get sad and need help themselves. It's redemptive in so many different levels. All right, so if you're with somebody who doesn't really care about it, about growth, don't despair. You do your growth and people are going to change. All right? When did we start?
6:45-ish.
All right, good. I want to take a 10-minute break there. Can y'all do 10 minutes? All right. I want to start again at 8:45. We'll pick 7:45. Yeah, 7:45. Good. All right, go.
There are restrooms right up here, too, and then the two down the stairs. Right out.